T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Will be another busy day. We will have a good guest for you. Frequent guest, outstanding guest, Major Garrett, 135. Regular, fantastic regular, Dara Moskowitz-Grumdahl, 235, and a reporter covering this tragedy in Thousand Oaks. Craig, is it Feener? Is that how we say it? But he's an outstanding reporter. He was at the bar. He's at the hospital now. And we will get to a number of topics, but we will be starting with what took place in Thousand Oaks. There's a lot of different ways to go. Adam, I'm going to start here because it certainly looks like Ian Long, the man who murdered the individuals at the bar and the police officer who walked into the scene along with the highway patrol officer 6 minutes after the phone call. This complete change from Columbine, right? This has been going on for years and years now where leading up to Columbine, it was, let's all get together. Let's get our best ideas. Let's get our best people. And if it takes a little bit longer, but then we'll go in. Then post-Columbine, it was, we wait too long. Too many people can be killed. We can't wait. This individual did not, and he was killed almost instantly. But this looks like Long was suffering from PTSD because there's a lot of reporting on him already. Appears, because it's early and the stories can change. We talked the other day, and by the way, this is not coming from someone who's a pacifist. I realize we have to deploy our military in locations. I realize we have to step in, and we are all thankful that individuals step forward and are willing to take jobs. And some of those jobs are absolutely life-threatening. And some of those jobs have long-term ramifications. And some people get the right treatment. And some people can slip through the cracks, whether it's through the VA, through the lack of people reaching out, through people reaching out and trying to do everything, but they can't get the individual step forward. They can't get authorities to get to this person. And we have, we talked the other day, Iraq still going on with thousands of troops. Afghanistan still going on with thousands of troops. We have thousands of troops everywhere. And that is a part of life. I am not calling, let's bring all our troops back and let's just back away. But we then have to accept what happens when we send people to locations. Sometimes people back for another and another and another. We talked about that with the mayor in North Ogden. Went back, I think it was his fourth time. Didn't have to. Could have passed on that and still did. And now you have this individual with family members saying his mom feared what would happen with him on a daily basis because he was living with his mom. You just heard the audio from CBS where a report, an individual lives in the area. I think that was the Marine who lives in the area, saying they knew when he was around, they could tell his actions, didn't seem stable. They had people come out in an authority position early this year, but the determination was made that they could not commit this individual. We're an enormous country, well over 300 million people. We have individuals with mental health challenges. We have individuals who are deranged. We have individuals who just have evil on their mind. And we have many individuals suffering from PTSD. What is fair about looking at our society and I don't want to say accepting, but knowing in a free society we're going to have awful events. But what are we doing to prevent those awful events, including in the area of PTSD? When we have hundreds of thousands of troops who are sent to Iraq and Afghanistan, sometimes back and back and back. What are we doing to reach out to these individuals? What capabilities are we showing? And are we doing a good enough job? That's one area I want to discuss. I want to hear from you. I want to hear your own personal stories about this. I want to hear your reflections on that. If it turns out that this story is driven by something other than PTSD, I still want your reaction, and we'll adjust to that, absolutely. But the idea of how we're dealing with individuals who have these challenges, including PTSD, where they're basically a completely different person from who they once were. Are we failing in that area of society? Are we actually doing a pretty good job, but it's unavoidable that individuals are going to slip through the cracks? And it's hard to say that when we just watch double figures murdered, when they're just out for fun to listen to some music on a night where, by the way, six different off-duty police officers were in the bar and acting as human shields, some of them, to protect individuals and save their lives. I want feedback. I want phone calls and texts. 651-989-9226 or text away 81807. This is the quote from a former Marine, a neighbor who was observing Long, saying that the mom was so worried. Very sweet woman. She had significant problems with the son. I know he tore the house up. Long toured Afghanistan, 5+ years. College roommate said he was mean, loner, often danced by himself. Among the texts coming in, reports I'm seeing say denied he had a problem. Ugh, just not acceptable. So sad. Another text, military, it's crazy to divert money and troops to the caravan when the real threat is here, not refugees. Idiotic argument when mental health of the vets is in crisis. Candidate Trump talked an awful lot about the emphasis on the VA and making changes and making it better. I know they made a change in leadership. I know you had some people who were pushing back, and I forget the gentleman's name, who was a holdover from the Obama administration, saying that he was too reluctant. I don't know the numbers. I know I've read in the last couple months some stories that criticize the VA, still saying, going back to many of the criticisms that were taking place during the Obama and Bush administrations on the follow-up on doctoring records, appearing to make this look better than it is. If this is PTSD, Adam, from the reporting, from what you look at this, how do you think we're handling this in the country when you have so many individuals out there? Our population, where are we at now? Are we 320 million, 330 million? I forget what the number is. It would be ideal if there was a way where we were checking and we were following up constantly, and that people who have, whether it's a mental illness well before the military or now it is PTSD, would acknowledge it right away, would have the ability, to acknowledge it right away and would do that. It doesn't work that way. And there's going to be a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking here because that authorities went out there and said not enough and let him go. From the reports we're seeing so far, what is both you guys, what's your initial gut instinct?
Well, hot take, mental illness is a huge problem in this country, and not to mention the thousands and tens of thousands of veterans who've been overseas and faced combat. And so clearly we are well under-equipped to deal with the mental health issues in this country. And again, we're just hours removed from this tragedy. And first of all, that's another amazing thing, is just how quickly we find out this information and how quickly we've already know so much about this this gunman.
I rolled over one point in the night, couldn't sleep, and looked at my phone and went, here we go again?
Yeah, I woke up this morning and it's like, I mean, it's it's sad that it's just not even shocking anymore that it's
right.
And again, I mean, how many times have we stood in the same spots talking about this? It's just.
And what systematically has changed?
Nothing. I mean.
Yeah. And again, what happens to Lindsay is whether, because there's some questions about the magazine capacity that he had with the Glock, that it's not in line with California law, but that the follow-up in that just wasn't there because it is allowed. But then if you even raise a gun conversation, folks just go to their absolute corner. You're just going to deny guns to those who are will purchase them legally, who don't mean any harm. You just want to take every single gun away from somebody. This show doesn't want to do that, okay? But this show wants to have an honest conversation about both. And what we get so often is we get deaths, brutal, murders, lives that were ended when they should have lived for decades and decades more. And then we have people who are devastated beyond words, and we watch funerals, and we go back to our lives, and whether it's on mental health, whether it's on guns, whether it's on agencies working together, whether it's the role at the local level, state level, federal level, we just go back because we go to our corners and we just get further entrenched. And it's just another example of where the country just doesn't work nearly as well as it once did in so many major issues. We just will stay right where we're at, blame the other side, and go on with the rest of our lives.
Absolutely. Going off of Adam's point about mental health, when I was a reporter in the newsroom, I was covering an event at the state capitol, and this statistic still to this day just makes me so sad, having dealt with not only my own mental health battle, but having dealt with my father and trying to get him help. It's something like there is a mental health bed in the state of Minnesota, one for every 100,000 people, and all of them are occupied.
Right.
You can't get anyone new in. And the path you have to take to actually get someone help when they're unwilling to do it themselves. I mean, my father was not someone who would have ever harmed anyone else. But even when he was in the throes of his own mental health battle, trying to get him help when he didn't want to, I mean, we would have had to have him committed. And the process to do that, one, it takes money.
Yep.
Let's just be honest about this.
Right.
The people in this country that typically get help are the ones that can afford it. I am so lucky that I can afford to go to therapy and that my insurance covers it enough that I can pay for that. I know I'm lucky in that, and I know that that is not the normal case in this country. The second thing that stands out for me, going off of what you said, and I've said this all along, the people in this country who don't want to change anything and think that, you know, it's just a few bad apples, aren't going to change their mind on gun laws until it's affecting them personally. And I don't mean someone trying to take away your guns, because yeah. I think if we had an honest conversation about it, you would know that the majority of the people in this country want smart gun laws when it comes to background checks. My point is the people who have stood up, the pro-gun people who are changing their stance on background checks, are the ones who have lost family members, who have been involved in massacres. We are talking about 50 to 60 people who were in that bar last night who were also at the Route 91 Las Vegas shooting.
Yep.
We are at a point now in this country where you are not surviving one mass shooting, you're surviving two mass shootings. And parents are getting calls from their
and
children.
And it won't shock us if it's three.
No, it's just, I tweeted this. We're going to have a reporter on from KNX in Los Angeles.
Right.
Who also covered the Las Vegas shooting 13 months ago. Was in Las Vegas covering that shooting, covering those families, covering those people, covering the aftermath, which we don't have answers for.
And by the way, San Bernardino, not that far away,
exactly.
A couple of years ago, you know. Let's do this. Let's pause because I want to get feedback. We're getting a number of texts, but I'd love phone calls also. Your reaction to this and why in the hell does nothing change? Outside of, you know, your shows, we talk about it. Politicians say the right things. They grieve. They said this shouldn't happen. We shouldn't tolerate it. But then if you just kind of look back on it and listen, no one is – it's not a zero-sum game. It's not going to be, well, this law won't stop everything, so we shouldn't do it. Or this dramatic upgrade of literally hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to help out more people with mental illness. Well, that won't solve all of it, so we better not do it. That's the bar now in our society. But again, you're afraid of getting politicized. And then what happens when there's an attack at a school? We have people come out and say they're crisis actors. Or we still don't treat people the same way with mental illness as opposed to other individuals where, wow, we've got an actual like blood results. But we still have people looking down at those and acting like that illness isn't as debilitating because it absolutely is. 651-989-9226 or text away 81807. We're going to have a reporter on from the scene in about 10 minutes or so. Among the texts coming in reacting to some of the topics we've raised, I'm married to a Vietnam Army combat vet that had a very difficult time returning home in 1969. He returned to college. His fellow vets could not have coped without using marijuana weekly for PTSD. From combat needs to be addressed with marijuana legalization to help those affected with PTSD. Absolutely. You know, I mean, again, the looking down the nose at medicinal, which is separate right now from the conversation of recreational marijuana, but then the belief in loading you up on opioid after opioid after opioid. Of course, those don't have any downside. And it's not like marijuana will be the panacea and resolve it. But when we have, and think about how it was Vietnam, Korea, other wars going back, and sadly we're, the numbers are dwindling from World War II, where it was, I'm not going to talk about it. So I won't reach out to a doctor, so I won't get treatment. At least we acknowledge it and are a bit more transparent about it, but we still have so far to go. Contrasting text here. Can't get any gun laws because the GOP is in bed with the NRA and takes tons of money from them. Well, let's just go back to when the president had the event with Parkland and said he was willing to do some things. And then when he got coached up again, nothing, zero was done on things that are just completely simple. The NRA is extraordinarily powerful. That's not to say we don't have extraordinarily powerful groups on the other side. Look at education, Minnesota, in this state. How many times do Democrats go against education, Minnesota? But the GOP, too many do flat out tippy-toe around the NRA. And this is not a show where we're making guns into the boogeyman, the evil, every single time. Because one, I'll just go to the next test. It's just like illegal immigration. We already have tons of gun laws. We choose to not enforce them. Well, let's enforce all of them. Then I'd appreciate this texture, text often. Tell me who specifically does not enforce them. What governor, what senator, what mayor, what president does not enforce the law?
What gun laws were not enforced in this case?
Yeah.
This one, just this one. I mean,
right now,
I assume you can't bring a gun into the nightclub was one, but he right. shot the guy. So I guess you can't shoot someone with a gun
right.
legally. So I guess that's a gun law that wasn't enforced.
Right, because from the reporting so far, he purchased the gun legally. Okay. Now, if he was exhibiting so many examples of PTSD, and we don't know that yet, that to me is a little bit troubling. But tell me specifically, because that's a great talking point, but let's some depth on that. What else can we add to background checks, mental illness? You know, there's a line there, Adam and Lindsay, about how far do we go? But, Adam, it was your line, I forget which tragedy, when you think how far we have to go if you buy a house that you'll sit there and sign what? 400 documents? And how many of
you? Scrutiny. Like, I'm going through it right now. The scrutiny you have to just buy a home to have some place to call my own home,
yep.
which I'm going through right now, is maddening.
Yep.
And to think that I can buy a gun much, much easier than I can buy a home.
Right. And this is not going to stop everything. Nobody, at least on this show, is so naive to say that if we have further background checks, legal background checks, that literally you will never have to lock a door, right? But it's this whole perfect, the enemy of good. It's just, it's like, do you really think everything's going to be stopped? So right. then we're done.
And I'm not saying that from someone who's not, tonight I'm leaving to go up north where I will use a gun this weekend.
So well, you probably won't because you're not that
right,
effective.
Right, but I mean, I'll have it with me in case I need it.
Yeah.
But so I'm not saying that as someone, boy, I really want to make it hard for me to buy a deer rifle because I don't. But should I go through some hoops to do it? Yes, because I feel like I'm a responsible citizen and I have the ability to own responsibly a deer rifle.
Remember in 2007, the over and over again, Obama literally is going to head to your house and take your guns. How'd that work out?
Right.
And again.
And the current president actually said maybe we should take away guns without running through hoops.
Here's what he said. We should take away guns without due process. Take that in. If Barack Obama, or as the conservatives say, Barack H. Obama, would have said that, their heads would have exploded. But because the president said such a clueless thing, because, no, I don't want to take anybody's guns without due process. I want people, including myself, to be able to protect myself, but there's a way to do both. Our country has virtually no money put away for mental health. These are texts. Elderly, disabled people care. It's a massive failure. We have a massive failure how we do not deal with mental health in a more significant way. And it's embarrassing because people are willing to talk about it, but we don't put up enough behind it. Why is this an accepted way to act out now? We've had more horrific wars in the past that caused PTSD. Why is it just the past 10 years that people are committing these acts? Why didn't this happen in the 50s, 60s, and 70s? There can be other factors. There's no doubt. But to say we didn't have mass shootings before or we didn't have lives ruined by PTSD, I think that's pretty naive. The problem is you never know when somebody's going to snap. That's a problem. They can be a great person all the way up until that happens. Well, it appears that there were some pretty strong signs with this person well before what happened last night. Traffic, weather, why don't we just pass on news, Adam, because we've got our guest who we're going to chat with from Thousand Oaks. What's that? Harry. Yeah, exactly. But we want to get to him on time and get some of the details following up on some of our conversations. So we certainly will have local news at different times, but just we wanted to include the text in this story. Let me dramatically switch here and talk about Harry's, which is a great razor company. I used Harry's this morning. I believe in it. If they stop advertising tomorrow, I will still use Harry's going forward. They are the best razor that I have had a chance. This is a couple of guys who wanted to take on the major company and said, we can and we will do it better. I am a longtime customer. I got plenty of friends who are longtime customers. Carter's a big Harry's guy. You can get, right now, new customers for a limited time, taking this deal. Five-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, travel cover, $3 plus free shipping. That's the price. I wasn't kidding. $3 plus free shipping, five-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover. How to get that? Harrys.com, promo code Hartman. You got to go to Harry's and chime in with Hartman at the code, and you'll get this amazing deal. And by the way, if you don't love it, 100% money-back guarantee. Since the start of our show, we've been talking about Thousand Oaks, what happened at the bar, the murder of patrons, police officer killed, the individual long taking his life. Craig Figner is good enough to join us, does an excellent job for KNX 1070 in Southern California in Los Angeles. Craig, I know your time is short, so thank you so much. Tell me how the story unfolded for you once you found out. Did you right away go to the bar?
We did. I got the call. You know, I was at home. I was asleep. I worked the morning news here at KNX and get the call of this shooting about, 90 minutes after it happened because didn't know at first the tragedy that it would become. But it unfolded quickly and got that call, got out here. Thousand Oaks is a bit of a drive. You know, people might think of it in relation to the Ronald Reagan Library.
Yep,
in this general area. So, yeah, it takes a little time to get out here, 45 minutes or so. And by the time you get out here, we know that there are 12 people dead. The shooting started at, 11:20 last night. And the shooter, we didn't know much about until several hours into this, about 6 o'clock hour this morning here on the West Coast. So this tragedy is 12 dead, with one of the 12 being a sheriff's sergeant who responded to this call heard it on the radio. He's a sergeant. They don't normally have to respond to those kinds of calls right away, but it was a shooting that sounded significant. And also a couple of California Highway Patrol officers who were on another call on the freeway immediately jam over here with the sergeant. And the sergeant is the one who confronts the shooter, is credited with ending the shooting, but lost his life.
Craig, this is an area for me because of a former job I know reasonably well. But for people listening right now, whether in Minnesota or online, who don't know the Thousand Oaks area in relation to L.A., can you just paint the scene about Thousand Oaks?
Well, sure. It's about 45 minutes if you're driving a freeway speed north. And the community of Thousand Oaks, you know, one of its claims to fame is, you know, the safest community city in I don't know if they say Southern California, but they have a certain qualifier there, and it's credible. There is a very low crime rate here. So for this shooting to happen at a small bar that is, you know, bar nightclub-ish place that's a country music place, super well-known. It's not a huge expansive club, but it is a place that has deep roots with people, an emotional connection. And also remember, too, that the Route 91 concert massacre in Las Vegas, which was a year and a month ago, also country music,
yep,
an outdoor music festival. The majority of those people were from Southern California. And I can tell you, and I knew this before because I covered that shooting extensively, but I know now that so many of those people were from Thousand Oaks. So they had this country music connection, and many of them had a connection to Route 91. Some of them, as I now know, were actually survivors of Route 91.
Right.
And then this happens in their community and for some of them in the very bar where they were last night.
So let's talk about the decision the sergeant made who lost his life. And this is an overall philosophy that police departments and individuals have made going back to Columbine, that as opposed to waiting for a potential large number of police officers or a specific SWAT team to go in, that you just feel like you need to go in as quickly as possible. And the reporting I have seen, that they get the first phone call, 911, people, you know, concerned, trying to figure out what's taking place. And it was literally 6 minutes later when he and a highway patrol officer entered the bar itself.
Yes, and we have reporting at KNX that when they get there, they can hear shooting. They can hear active gunfire inside this bar. And so they make that decision that, of course, I think people expect them to make, to immediately
go in.
And confront that. And so that's what unfolds. And we haven't heard about what happened exactly when he went in, but I have witnesses I've talked to say, okay, the shooting starts. It's at the front entrance there. A bouncer, security person is shot and killed. A person who works at a front counter is shot and killed. And then there are about 20 shots quick is what they say to me, even though, well, I shouldn't say that. We know the weapon he was using, but it seems maybe there couldn't have been that many. But that's what I'm told. And they say that he then throws out some type of smoke bombs or some kind of distraction device that creates smoke. And then there's a pause in the shooting. And we think maybe that is perhaps the time when those officers arrive and the sheriff's deputy. We'll piece that together later, but that's an important moment because there's a break. He goes to a back office inside the bar, and then they go in, and there's the confrontation that results in the sheriff's deputy's loss of life.
How big is this bar?
It is small. I haven't been into it, but I've talked with a number of people who are there. You know, they say it was at least 100 people in it at that hour last night. And that it wasn't crowded, but that's a comfortable amount of people for that space. So, and the dance floor is not large. So, in looking at pictures of it, I don't know the square footage, but this is not a large, expansive place. It does have a large patio out on the side that I saw. And then it's also up, it's raised. You know, you have to walk upstairs to get to it. So many people climbed out through windows that were broken out as they had to get out to run for their lives. They had to then kind of climb down the side of the building to get to the actual ground.
I saw some reporting, I think it was in the LA Times, saying that 6 off-duty officers were in the bar. Are you also hearing that? And is there any particular reason why that just 6? Were they just there because they loved music? Had the bar reached out to them? Do you know about that?
We do know that a lot of law enforcement live in Thousand Oaks, and that may be partly why. It's just a matter of odds. They were off-duty. They were there. They were enjoying the country music. And again, this is not just another bar of many. I mean, this is one with deep roots. So this is the go-to
yep.
place if you like
Got
country
it.
Music, especially if you like line dancing. And so they were there. You know, there was also that same conclusion drawn with people didn't kind of connect it to country music, but a lot of law enforcement, we know like country music. They have an attachment to the themes in the music. And at Route 91 in Las Vegas, there was an enormous off-duty law enforcement presence there. And so it wasn't a surprise to learn that this morning.
Craig Figner is with us, excellent reporter for KNX 1070 in Southern California, reporting on the death of 12 and the taking of the life, his own life, Ian Long, the individual who was behind the murder of these 12 individuals. Can we talk a little bit more about the sergeant who lost his life, the fact that he was expected to retire sometimes next year, and then the person, the sheriff who was in charge of this, who's very close to the sergeant, he's actually retiring as of tomorrow, I think, correct?
Yeah, the Ventura County Sheriff and the sergeant, they were workout buddies. And I shouldn't say were, you know, this was kind of present tense. They were, you know, they were close friends. And the sheriff talked about him this morning extensively, said he was on the phone with his wife. He was in his patrol car. He heard the call dispatch of this trouble at that bar and went to the borderline knowing that there were shots fired and didn't think twice about it. And he's a sergeant. You know, he's got nearly 30 years in law enforcement, was going to retire in a year. Sergeants don't always have to respond to every call, but there's something in him that said, okay, I need to be there. He was also a block and a half away, so he was close. And that's why he gets there so fast. You know, there's a certain amount of time it takes to get someone to get to the phone,
sure.
to make the call,
right.
and then dispatch to send it out. And he's there right quick. And those CHP officers, California Highway Patrol, are with him. And so, again, this can't be a location that Sergeant Ron Helis didn't know about. In fact, he probably heard the call. It probably stood out because it was this particular location, the borderline bar and grill.
From the reporting so far about Long, many people are saying that in April, police and mental health specialists were called to the home for an evaluation. And at that time, the decision was made that he did not qualify to be committed involuntarily. Do we know
yeah.
what access that the media and others will have to that? Because clearly questions are going to be raised about what did happen there and should a different decision have been made?
Well, we have, again, reporting that kind of speaks to that at KNX. And one of my colleagues was out at the house, that neighborhood, and that's an area known as Newberry Park. It's very, very near here. And there's a neighbor who says, okay, I'm the one who called police and said something's not right in this home. That was back in April. And the police respond, and the neighbor tells us that there was like the sound of demolition going on in the house and stuff being destroyed. And it sounded rough and violent and raucous and not right. And so he calls and reports this, and they do respond. They do talk to him. They make a note, according to the Ventura County Sheriff, that there's maybe a mental health issue here, could be PTSD. We know he was previously in the military.
Mm-hmm.
He's a veteran. And they can't do anything more. And this neighbor telling us that they said, hey, we can't arrest somebody for destroying their home, their own property. That's their decision to make if they so choose.
Was this when he was living at his mother's house?
Yes, that is his mother's house, yes.
Yep. Do we know at this point what his mother said to those individuals?
We've heard nothing from her yet, and I don't know if it's because she's not speaking or she's unable or she's not living there anymore, because that part of the story is, you know, there's so many pieces. That's one that I've had to observe through my colleagues because I've been attached to the crime scene.
Yep. And you're now at the hospital, is that right?
Yes, this is where the motorcade took Sergeant Helis's body in a moment of just high emotion. This announcement came in late, you know, in the process here, but everybody who heard about this event, this tragedy, immediately was glued to the developments. And so one of them, the first one, was a chance to honor the sacrifice. And so people with no direct connection, but felt one because of the sacrifice of the deputy's life, we're out here lining the streets watching as that motorcade took the body from the emergency room to the coroner's medical examiner's facility, and it was just something that, again, I talked to so many people. They felt they had to be here, they needed to be here because of their attachment to the community and the safety that law enforcement brings them. And after learning this news this morning, everybody had a deeply emotional reaction. So this was a fitting place for so many people as far as they felt to be.
Last thing, and I greatly appreciate your time. When do we expect to hear from authorities once again?
We don't have a scheduled briefing right now, but we were told that as new information was available, they'd bring it to us. And, you know, they've been good about that. We've had very regular updates, and so we're expecting to learn more. Part of the crime scene processing that was so crucial this morning and why there was the delay in identifying the victims was that they needed to look for any evidence, make sure this is contained, make sure there's nobody else connected to it.
Yep.
And so that created a delay, and then the next process of identifying the victims, and now that has been done.
But right so far, they do believe, at least at this point, and the investigation still is unfolding, that this was a single person involved.
Right. No, nobody else involved. That's the last information we had. Also, just one weapon. It was a Glock 21 with a 45 caliber bullets with an extended magazine attached and purchased legally, and no connection to any other people that we have been told. Nothing to suggest that.
Excellent reporting, Craig, and a busy day. I know you're going a lot of different ways, so I thank you for coming on.
Good to be with you.
Craig Figner, very good reporter. You can tell from what he had to say there from KNX out in Southern California. We'll stay tuned to this. Obviously, CBS will continue to cover it. And if there's any, if there's a press conference of some sort that would take place during our show, certainly we will pass that along to you. Linda's construction time check is 12:56. Mark. 12:56, time to create a more energy-efficient home with Season Guard windows. This entire hour, all on this tragedy out of Thousand Oaks. Many other items to get to, and we certainly may get back to the story, especially if more information comes in. Remind you about our two guests coming up. One, a regular, Dara, is great, willing to give her opinion, dish out information, break stories, and the food restaurant scene. Dara, as always, is with us at 2:35. And in 35 minutes or so, the best White House correspondent and one of the best radio guests that we have, Major Garrett. Do you think Major Lindsay more excited to be on the Colbert Show last night or come on this little dog and pony show?
I honestly think he likes coming on our show because you always throw some sort of random debate at him, and he gets to kind of go away from the White House chat for a second.
I got a feeling he liked the Colbert. Will he be wearing as much makeup with us as he did for the Colbert?
Well, we won't be able to see him.
I guess we'll have to rely on him.
He's so good.
He is outstanding.
Just so good.
And he's got the takeout. He has the great book, Mr. Trump's Wild Ride. He's coming to town. We'll get more details on that. Yes, next month, Mr. Garrett is coming to town. So hopefully we can work something out. Jim Acosta, Tucker Carlson, Don Lemon, the press and the media. All that coming up next hour early.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.